Hello there, old bean. Welcome to Magecast, most pontifically our episode on Pokemon Sword and Shield.
All right, thanks, Obi-Wan. My special guest this time around is one who has rather much games writing under his cap, and that is Corey, the senior games editor of Popzara Press, a.k.a. the Infernal Accountant Mage. You'll find this podcast is mint as we unpack just why Pokemon has become the global phenomenon that it is. This is the fastest selling Switch game ever for a reason. Before we get into the episode proper, I must needs remind you that you can, yes, please you can, leave a review for Magecast on spots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, so on. Drop us a like while you're at it. It really helps the show attract more listeners. You can support Magecast even further by visiting patreon.com/thewellreadmage. And now let's get on with it, shall we? Hey folks, welcome to a jolly good episode of Magecast. Today I'm sitting down with Corey, who is the senior games editor with Popzara Press. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, and along with being the senior games editor with Popzara Press, I've actually written a few pieces for the Wellray Mage under the name The Infernal Accountant Mage.
This is true. You've done columns in the past, and you also did a review for Vagrant Story, which I think is a game that needs a little more appreciation in the world.
Well, you know, let me tell you, I appreciate the game enough for the entire world and several parallel universes besides, so don't worry about that.
It is your favorite game of all time, if that's right.
Vagrant Story is my favorite game of all time, yes.
So go out and read that review, folks. That was a good one. But today we're going to be talking about Pokemon Sword and Shield. Before we get to that, though, let me ask you, what have you been playing recently?
Recently, I've been playing a fair amount of a MOBA that I play quite a bit of, League of Legends. When people say the community is toxic, they're absolutely right. Learn to get past it. There's a Battle Royale game called The Darwin Project that just had its full release recently. I've been playing a fair amount of that. Nice thing about that game, people's mics are turned on automatically. So if you sneak up behind somebody and shoot them, they'll yell and they won't know that you could hear them yelling. It's very funny.
Oh my. Have you ever... Has that resulted in something like completely humiliating beyond the yelling?
Oh no, it's hilarious every single time. Like, people will think they're talking to their spouses or their girlfriends or their moms, and they'll have no idea that them talking is helping me find them. Wow. My favorite thing to do actually is I'll turn my speakers toward my microphone and just start blaring Ricky Martin playing Livin' La Vida Loca.
So you've never caught somebody like making out or anything like that?
Unfortunately, no, but I'm sure it'll happen eventually.
It will happen eventually. But yeah, I know you play quite a lot of games. I was actually going to ask you, you know, what are you not playing? Because that'd probably be a more manageable list.
Yeah, I think my Steam account's up to about 2,500 games now. So it's kind of hard to tell what I should be spending my time on and what's not worth it. And, you know, something I always say in our Mage chat is I don't think there's many bad games released these days. So it's really hard to pick.
Yeah. Yeah, so you could just enjoy yourself. Well, how did you get into games writing in the first place?
So my first experience with games writing was with a site called J Is Games, and they used to cover a lot of these Flash games and early HTML games back when that was the big thing, back before indie games kind of shifted that style of gaming over to a paid model. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was a kind of a dream of mine for years, actually. I read them like every day for 2-3 years or so. And one day I finally got the gumption up, like, you know what, I don't know if I'm good enough to do this, but I'll never know until I try. So I sent them an application. It went through. They let me write for them for a while. And eventually, when that stopped being much of a thing, I switched over to Popzara. So now I do that. I've been to E3 a couple of times. I've been to CES a couple of times. You know, I don't want to say I have my finger on the pulse of the industry because that's gross, but I've had some insights, and it's been a really great experience.
That's cool. Were you saddened, shocked, surprised to hear that Sony would be dipping out on E3 this year?
I wasn't surprised in the least. You know, the last couple ones that I've been to, I hate to say this because it sounds elitist and that's not right, but when they started allowing the public to buy tickets and kind of come to the show as well and make it more of a con rather than a trade show, I think that definitely had an impact on the quality of the show and what people could display, because if you've never been, the lines are absurd. And letting more people in made it even more absurd. It gets to the point where even getting to your appointments becomes an issue. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that was a great choice. And I can understand why people are maybe shifting over to a more Nintendo Direct model of announcing things.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that sounds elitist at all. That seems to make sense that, you know, you're there sort of as an industry professional. You're reporting on things. You're a writer, a journalist, if you will. But sort of having to fight your way through the public, then that makes it a little difficult to do your job.
Right. And I'm not saying that people shouldn't be allowed to come and enjoy things. I'm saying that if you want a more con type experience, then there should probably be a con. But if you're coming there to like do your job and learn about the industry and write about things and get people hyped up, that's what a trade show is for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hate to say it, they should probably be two separate events.
Hmm. Well, maybe there will be. Who knows?
Maybe.
But I do like the direct approach. It kind of lets everybody... I mean, I live right here. Like, E3's in my backyard. I've just never gone there.
Right. You know, so honestly, at this point with the Well-Run Mage, you could probably apply for a pass and make it in should you want to go.
I should. Well, if Sony hadn't dipped out, you know. They were
exactly.
The, yeah. Well, anyways, let's get into talking about Pokemon here. So we're going to talk about Pokemon Sword and Shield. This is episode 40, Galarian Omissions. Pokemon Sword and Shield was developed by Game Freak and released in 2019 for Nintendo Switch. Couple of mage facts. Sword and Shield became the fastest selling Switch games worldwide fairly quickly, which was which was surprising, given some of the, you know, backlash controversy. We'll get into that a little bit. But I think that's great. It shows the general populace doesn't care. They're just like, hey, cool, Pokemon. Pokemon Sword and Shield are themed after Great Britain, the British Isles. Indie developer Toby Fox, creator of Undertale, composed a single track in this game. The Pokédex and Pokemon models caused significant controversy or non-troversy, and we'll get into that in a little bit. Sort of the reason why I invited you onto this episode, sir, is you are the king of Caliente. You're the Sultan of Spice. I have seen some great, some appreciable hot takes from you. And the Magecast of the show is kind of about all these various opinions. That's why I have different guests all the time and different perspectives and highlighting those, whether I agree with them or not. And I think you and I might have disagreed once or twice.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you have every right to be wrong about things. Yeah, I respect
okay.
that.
That's part of, free will. We could be free to be wrong. But the reason why I have you on is because I want to hear your perspectives. And I want to have them down on audio so I could blackmail you someday. But the final mage fact here is there are more outfit choices in this game than necessary.
Yeah, speaking of opinions that are wrong, Sword and Shield has precisely the right amount of outfits, which is plenty.
Yeah, have you tried them all?
I've tried them all. I'm wearing one right now, in fact.
Oh, how dapper. I wish
you
we
know,
had
been. I am so British, I'm actually sipping tea and wearing a monocle while I talk to you. It's a British talent that we have.
Wonderful. So what were some of your first impressions with this game? You picked it up day one?
I did. I kind of enjoyed it from start to finish. I thought it was a really excellent game. If I had one complaint about it, it'd be that it wasn't long enough. I would have liked there to have been more. And that's kind of an odd thing to say because there is actually a fair amount of content, especially with this new wild area concept.
That's true. Well, they're going to be expanding it soon, but I kind of had the same feeling when I finished the core game. I was like, oh, you know.
The core game
short.
To me, yeah, it feels to me like it kind of wraps up on, it wraps up very quickly. Like you reach a certain point, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, we ran out of funding, we have to finish this game right now. So the last couple hours, I would say, feel like they maybe weren't quite finished yet.
And what version did you pick up?
I picked up both, but I played Shield.
Why Shield?
Because I figured most people would play Sword.
Ah, that's interesting. I figured the exact opposite.
Really?
That most people would play Shield. But
and I kind of wonder if that was the decision in a lot of that was the deciding factor in a lot of people's decisions to play one or the other. Is, you know what, I'm going to pick the one that fewer people have, so I'll have more of, say, X exclusive Pokemon, and it'll make trading easier.
Yeah, I would love to see the numbers on which one sold more, Sword or Shield.
You know, it's funny, if you look at the NPD numbers, they actually do say which one sold better because they count them as separate games, and it turns out Sword sold better.
Oh, no.
Yep.
That means I'm wrong already.
Mm-hmm. The first of many times, don't worry.
Well, one of the other reasons why I picked up Sword was because I really love Sirfetch'd.
Sirfetch'd is great. I traded for him, I traded for a Galarian Farfetch'd pretty much immediately, and he stuck around on my team for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. That Leaf Blade is wonderful. But mm-hmm. Shield, of course, has the Unicorn Ponyta, and it doesn't get much cooler than that.
You know, one of the issues that I would have with Pokemon in general these days is that there are so many of them, and you only really have 6 slots on your team. It hurts to have to make those cuts.
I felt that. I felt that this time around. I was like, I really want to play with the new Pokemon species that they released with this game. I really want to play with all these Galarian versions of classic Pokemon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I ended up with Snorlax in my final team. Like, what the heck?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an interesting point to make, too, that you also felt that way, because one of the big, non-traversies is the term that we'll use, was that the Pokedex and the number of Pokemon wasn't complete. Like, not every single Pokemon is in Pokemon Sword and Shield. So I guess maybe the concern was that you would run out of Pokemon to use, and that is not true.
Yeah.
That's not even remotely true.
How many Pokemon are in these? Was it 600 or something like that?
I want to say it's around 600. Yeah, I don't have exact numbers in front of me, but I think it's about 600.
That sounds about right. Well, what were some of the favorite things for you in Sword and Shield?
Well, like I mentioned a little bit ago, I thought the wild area was fantastic. There's no question about it. And honestly, I don't know that I've seen many people who've had a bad thing to say about the wild area. You know, maybe they didn't like the game as a whole, but generally speaking, the wild area is a hit. And if you haven't played it, the wild area is kind of like an open world take on Pokemon. You can go wherever you want. There's different Pokemon to catch and battle with, and you can collect a different currency to buy things with. It's a really great idea in general. And it contrasts really strongly with the kind of traditional JRPG-style dungeon crawling that really makes up most of what Pokemon is. Though, that's still in this game, too. This is just like an addition. It doesn't replace anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of... to me, it almost seemed like two separate games or two separate concepts. When I first hit the wild area, I was just like, this is wonderful. You can go around, explore, there's raids, you can meet up with people, all these cool things.
Right.
Sort of like the dream Pokemon experience that you and I have had since Red and Blue. All
that everybody's had since Red and Blue. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Especially because, you know, you can turn the online mode on and there you are. You are living that dream. You are playing Pokemon online with other people, even getting in giant raid boss battles with other people playing Pokemon simultaneously. I mean, young me, back in whatever year it was, playing Red and Blue, thought that that would be... It would never happen, but it would be so great, and yet here it is. It's right here.
Yeah.
So I will say, you know, the wild area is great. It's not perfect, and my biggest issue with it, if I had to pick one, the fact that there is a level cap on the stuff you can catch based on your story progression, uh-huh. I understand why it has to be there, and I agree with it as a gameplay design decision. It doesn't mean I have to like it on an instinctual level. You know, when I find somebody cool who I want to catch and I can't do it because I don't have enough badges, that doesn't feel good. I don't like it.
Yeah, I like that you phrase that as an instinctual level. We've been told for decades, got to catch them all.
Yeah.
But in this game, it's you need to catch them all, but you need to wait until you beat a few.
You got to catch them all, but you got to wait a little bit.
Yeah. What I actually did, because there's still the routes, there's still the gym battles in this, is after sort of tidying up in the wild area, I just blazed through the rest of the game. I skipped trainers, I skipped items, I skipped catching Pokemon. And I was like, you know, I'll come back to that and I'll just try and get through all the gym leaders as fast as I can. And then I'll come back and I'll explore and look around.
And you know what? That's not the way that I played it myself. I definitely came back to the wild area a few times in the course of my playthrough. Sorry, English is my first language. but I know that from what I've seen on Twitter and Reddit and other gaming forums and people that I've talked to, friends of mine, they all say they did a lot of what you did. They said they went to the wild area first, realized that this level cap was a thing, and the way they'd get past it was to finish the main story, so that's what they did. They just blitzed the main story, and when that was done, you got this whole open world to just enjoy for yourself.
Yeah, and it's totally doable. Something that we'll probably touch on a little later is how simple the game is to play. Mm-hmm. It's still the fairly accessible Pokemon game that, you know, you might remember. Playing before all these years ago, so that
the gym battles got progressively harder, the dragon battle at the end being the hardest.
Right.
But it wasn't so hard that even without grinding and without, you know, fighting every trainer and stuff like that, I still didn't lose.
Right.
So it's definitely doable, but that's kind of cool that you could play this game however you like.
Yeah, that's a wonderful touch. And I think that kind of defines a lot of Nintendo games. You know, they have a specific way to play them, like rules that you have to follow. But generally speaking, within those rules, you're kind of free to do your own thing and play it your way. And I think that's great.
Hmm. And maybe that's part of the appeal to for adults and for children. This is a game that my four-year-old could dink around with and you know, putz around, catch Pokemon in the grass. But it's a game that I could blitz through at the same time. And we both got a level of enjoyment out of that.
Right.
Gym leaders, though. Did you have a favorite gym leader?
So I played Shield, which means that I had access to the Ghost-type gym leader, who is his Alistair. He's this little kid with a mask.
Yeah.
I thought he was really cool, but I will say that it kind of hurt my appreciation of him after the fact when I looked up the gym leader you had when you played Sword, and the gym challenge was exactly the same. The only thing that changed was the leader himself.
Huh.
Which, that's kind of a cop-out. Like, come on, guys. Really?
Yeah, it's
a little bit lame. But no, I thought he was really great. I liked him more when, in the post-game, when you get different gym leader cards, it turns out that, oh, he's actually just really shy. He's not possessed by a ghost or something. He's just, like, super shy and doesn't want to be seen. I don't know. I thought he was great.
Yeah, that's cool. I actually didn't know that there were variations in gym leaders between the two different versions. So
yeah.
I started playing Sword, and I'm like, okay, cool. So we got, you know, the fire guy, the water person, of course. And I was like, oh, okay, we got a fighting gym leader. And then I see this ghost gym leader online. I'm like, what the heck? Oh, it's in Shield. Darn it. Because I like ghost types. But for this one, I'd probably say, I mean, I've always liked grass types, but the grass type gym leader on this is kind of a dweeb. So I'll go with Raihan, or however you pronounce his name. The dragon.
Raihan, yeah.
The dragon gym leader. He was pretty cool.
What? You know, I loved his animations where he would, like, take selfies during the battle. It's great.
Yeah, they gave these guys a little more personality. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's wonderful. And that's honestly a big defining characteristic of this game compared to the other ones. I think even if you consider what feels like a relatively smaller amount of content when it comes to the main story, that's made up for by two things. One is the wild area. Two is just the amount of just raw personality and love that's put into this game. Like, the gym leaders have their own animations. Your character does different things based on, you know, how you, if you're using Gigantamax or not. It's just, there's a lot of attention paid to little details, and I think that's what really makes a game.
Yeah, definitely. Have you kept up with the Pokemon franchise over the years? Have you played each one as they came out?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I've played them all as they came out. I think the only ones that I didn't play right when they came out were Ruby and Sapphire, but then, you know, a few years after that, I'm going to date myself here. I started going to college, and Emerald comes out, and I picked that one up, and I think a lot of people would say that's probably the best Pokemon has ever been, and, you know, I don't want to agree with them, but I kind of have to, because it's a solid game, and I love that game. I played tons of Pokemon Emerald. You know, Diamond and Pearl come out, I play those, Black and White, I've kept up with it the entire time. It's one of my favorite franchises, easily.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I actually dropped off around Emerald. So I did play Emerald, and I agree. I mean, that's a great, iconic Pokemon experience. But I didn't play much after that. Snippets here and there. So this and the Pokemon Let's Go games that came out before it and Pokemon Go itself were kind of the only Pokemon games that I've played recently. I have not played Sun and Moon. So I'm glad that you've kept it up, because I think that's going to help inform some answers to questions that we have here.
You know, I always try to be informative and correct, and I'll be both of those, so don't worry.
Okay. So least favorite thing. So you mentioned the wild area that you didn't appreciate on an intuitive level, instinctual level, rather, the whole level cap thing. Were there any other things in this game that weren't quite your cup of tea?
You know, I'm having trouble thinking of anything I liked quite as... that I dislike quite as much as that level cap thing. That was really irritating. Again, I know why you had to do it, but come on, guys. If I had to pick a second thing that bothered me, it's something else I mentioned earlier. The fact that the main story, which you are honestly really incentivized to blitz through and just blaze through, it's very short. Like, I would say that if you didn't take stop-offs to do the wild area and such, you could probably beat Pokemon Sword and Shield in maybe a weekend. I would say about 30, 40 hours, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And that's if you're not doing anything different, like, you know, if you don't go and do the different battle stuff, if you don't go and explore the wild area, if you don't search for items, if you were to just blaze through the game, which is entirely possible given a lot of the quality of life concessions that, not concessions, quality of life considerations that have been made. Yeah, that's very doable.
Hmm. Yeah, I think so. There are a lot of things in the story, too, that I think kind of felt tacked on. The environmental theme that kind of plays out toward the end. I was like, you guys do realize you're capturing like wild animals and like forcing them to fight. Like, what are you like worried about the environment all of a sudden? Plus, too, the chairman's sort of like, we're going to run out of energy in 1,000 years. Therefore, I'm going to cause like a massive like environmental disaster today. I think there's a lot of things in this particular Pokemon game that just didn't seem to follow to my mind. It seemed like there were ideas that the developers had that they wanted to put in the game, but it didn't seem like the characters had, you know, the right motivation and things like that. But I think at the end of the day, nobody really plays Pokemon games for story.
You know, I'm inclined to agree with you on that. There have definitely been efforts to implement more of a story-based progression system into Pokemon. If you look back in Black and White actually is probably the most story-based of any Pokemon game. The game doesn't even actually end when you battle the Pokemon League. It ends when you finish the main story, which is those are two different concepts.
Hmm.
So, you know, maybe some people liked that, maybe some people didn't. I personally thought it was fine. I didn't mind it much. As far as what you say as far regarding, you know, capturing wild animals, making them fight, the Pokemon world is interesting in that it's never really played like that. The one game in which it's even considered to be played like that is Black and White, actually, where it's, you are told by the villains, from a villainous standpoint, they are clearly meant to be wrong, that what you are doing by capturing and battling Pokemon is essentially slavery.
Hmm.
But throughout Black and White, as you play, you make the point that no, this is not slavery. This is a partnership. They want to do this. This is kind of a symbiotic thing between human and Pokemon. And that's how Pokemon usually plays it. It's kind of a utopian take on things. It's, you know, we care about the environment. We care about these animals. We don't just make them fight. And people who do just make them fight are the bad guys, and they always lose.
Right.
It's a very progressive standpoint, if you think about it.
Yeah. Well, you remember the old iconic Pokemon cartoon, right? I'm thinking of a scene right now. It's fresh on my mind because my children enjoy watching Pokemon or watching the early seasons. That scene where Weezing and I think it was Koffing and Ekans actually are talking to each other, and they're saying that Pokemon aren't bad. It's just trainers that are bad. And so the villains that we've seen in Pokemon games tend to be those that use Pokemon for their own selfish ends. But
right.
It seems like they do try to develop this kind of symbiotic utopian relationship between humans and Pokemon.
Right, exactly. Because when you play Pokemon, like, how often do you see things like, oh no, there's an energy crisis, oh no, there's hunger?
Mm-hmm.
These problems in the Pokemon world have been solved, so far as we can tell. It's not an issue. And a lot of times it's kind of played off as, oh, it's because we worked with nature. We formed this bond with nature, and that's what makes things work. Likewise, you know, we did this, we formed a bond with Pokemon, so when they battle, it's a test of skill. It's not to the death. Nobody dies. People get knocked unconscious. It's a test of skill. We are practicing and training against one another. We're not actually fighting.
I think that's core. That's at the heart of the Pokemon series. And I don't mean to evoke any of the journalistic tendencies that we've seen with games like Monster Hunter, you know, where it's like you're just murdering, you're going around murdering nature. I don't think that that's Pokemon at all. But another least favorite thing that I want to pull out,
sure.
I didn't really like the starters in this one. What did you think of the three starters?
You know, I don't want to be that guy, but I have to be honest. I thought Sobble was great. I liked the Gorilla Pokemon Grookey. The fact that the rabbit, the most interesting one of the three, the rabbit Score Bunny, becomes this chubby armed soccer player. I don't want to say the same thing as everybody else. That's not who I am, but uh-huh. I'm going to say it. Cinerace is lame. Cinerace is super duper lame. I picked Sobble. Every time Hop showed up with this Cinerace, I could not resist murdering it because it's so lame. Like, and again, I know this is the same opinion everybody who plays this game has. Cinerace is insanely lame. You have this wonderful chance to make something new and exciting, and you made a soccer-playing rabbit with fat arms. Like, come on.
Well, you know what? Maybe everybody's saying it because they're right. I think that the first forms for the starters are pretty cool. I like the Grookey and Scorbunny and Sobble just fine. But once you start getting into, like, Thwacky and stuff like that, and I don't know. And then I started with Grookey. So by the time I got a Rillaboom, I was like, I don't even like this anymore. They're weird looking.
You didn't actually like Rillaboom. I thought Rillaboom was great.
I mean, I liked him, but the idea of like the design looks weird. I don't know. It's like his hair is floating off his back. I don't know what's going on with that angler thing in front of his head. There's just too much going on. It's like from a design standpoint, there's something strange there.
Honestly, I have a copy of Sword laying around on digital that I mean to play at some point. And I'm definitely going to pick Grookey because I thought Rillaboom was super cool. But, you know, to each their own.
Yeah.
You can be wrong.
Well, I mean, he was my first pick. If I ever was to play this game again, I would probably go Team Sobble. Was it Inteleon?
Inteleon, who is he's an intelligence agent, which I thought is super cool.
Yeah. I mean, he looks cool. And then he's got, like, gigantic hands for almost no reason.
I mean, he shoots water out of his hands. He's like a sniper. It's great. It's real great. Just try it sometime. You got to trust me on this one.
Okay, I think I will. Question here from Winstolf. Question would be, as a guy who's just picked this one up, how irritating is Hop, really? Were you irritated by Hop, the rival?
I don't know if I would say Hop was irritating. I think I was mostly embarrassed for Hop. Hop would show up, and he'd be all gung-ho, like, I'm going to battle you and show how great I am because my brother's the champion, and rah, 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 rah. And then he'd lead with his stupid sheep. I would demolish his team, and that would be that. Like, I don't know if he was irritating so much as just like, come on, guy. Just, you have to realize when something's not working.
Yeah. You know what? I liked that in this Pokemon game, and maybe you could let me know if this is something that's unprecedented for the series. I liked that they made Hop fail. And sort of acknowledge that and kind of wrestle with, you know, this existential, am I really supposed to be a Pokemon trainer? Am I really supposed to follow this dream? And so he kind of had like a character arc. Is that something that you've seen from rivals before?
Not quite to the extent that you see it in Sword and Shield. I mean, obviously your rivals are always going to fail. They're terrible.
Yeah.
The only one that felt anywhere near competent was were the ones in Red and Blue and Gold and Silver.
Oh, yeah.
Gold and Silver was a straight up criminal. And Red and Blue, I mean, the guy is very clearly meant to be, like, your actual equal. In following games, it felt a lot like they were making rivals that were meant to be, nearly your equal, but a step or two behind you. So you would always win, and it would feel right that you always won.
Yeah.
And that's what they did here. You know, Hop is meant to be kind of a confidence booster. Like, you know what? I beat Hop. I'm ready to move on. And if I ever didn't beat Hop, then there is something wrong with me, and I should see a professional because he's terrible. He's so bad. He's so bad at Pokemon.
Yeah, pick another dream, Hop. I'm sorry. Well, so what about Bede, this guy? B-E-D-E, that's how I said it, Bede.
Mm-hmm. I think it actually is Bede. I think that's correct. I liked him as kind of your more competent rival, which is why it really interested me when he was just taken out of the plot like halfway through. Like, he just stopped being a thing.
Yeah, and you could kind of see that, okay, he's going to become the fairy gym leader. But they do cut him out halfway through. But it's an interesting thing that, to my mind, because I'm always remembering the original rival, Gary, you know, who I was terrified of as a child.
Right. Smell you later.
Yeah, but to split it up, he's like every bully that you ever had, Gary. But to split it up between Hop, that's sort of this more like empathetic character, and then Bede that like you can't possibly like at all. In this game was I think a nice touch. It kind of creates more of like a villainous rival and then more of a rival that you can relate to and see develop over time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're kind of meant to be intimidated by Bede. Like, And when you fight Bede, his levels are a bit higher than you would expect from Hop. He's got a bit better of a... He uses a lot of psychic types, which, you know, those are intimidating because if you played Red and Blue, you know they're pretty strong. Mm-hmm. You still beat him, but you would expect him to become kind of a long-running villain character. And I would say the fact that they just kind of yoink him off the stage so early on is itself kind of an interesting twist. Like, the thing with Pokemon, and you'll see this in every single professional review of it that they ever write, the thing with Pokemon is that they have a formula and they like to stick to it. So any deviations from that formula tend to be interesting.
Do you think that that's, generally speaking, a Nintendo game design philosophy is sort of like a formulaism?
Yeah, to some extent, I would agree with that. I think that Nintendo finds a formula that works, and if it does, they keep going with it. And if it doesn't, maybe they just let it drop off.
Star Fox.
Yeah.
There you go. So let's move on here. A question here from Tomaki Weekly. I would love to hear a section on quality of life changes in the game. What type of changes make the experience better? An example of those changes would be the absence of would you like to use Surf or would you like to use Cut? How do you feel about the lack of HMs? So appropriate question, because earlier you mentioned quality of life considerations.
Yes. So one of the big things about Pokemon in the past couple generations, especially in Sun and Moon, actually, they dropped the concept of HMs, and that's wonderful. You know, I am very happy with that. I like the idea, thematically, of HMs. I like the thought that in order to progress, you have to do this symbiotic thing with your Pokemon. You can't cut down this tree, but maybe your Scyther can. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have him with you, and not only is he good in battle, but he helps you get through this dungeon. So that's great. I like that. The issue was when you only have 4 move slots on your Pokemon, and you have to specify one of those for a move that's maybe not so good. Now, there's one HM move that's really any good, that's Surf, and everybody loves Surf. What they did in Sun and Moon is create this concept where you don't use your own Pokemon to perform these HM moves. You have other Pokemon who come in and do the move for you and then leave, and that's great. You know, it means you still have this kind of symbiotic aspect to Pokemon, but they're no longer yours. You're borrowing somebody else's, and you're not ruining your own team's competitive viability in doing it. Mm-hmm. And Sword and Shield are just gone. Like, it's not even a thing anymore. There's no longer this question of, you know, can I get to this dungeon? I don't have Cut. Cut's not a thing.
Yeah.
Whether or not I like that better, I honestly think I preferred the version in Sun and Moon better, where they were still a thing, but it wasn't your Pokemon doing them, because, you know, they're not a bad concept. It was a bad implementation in the first many, however many generations.
Yeah.
As far as quality of life stuff goes, I think my biggest thing, and people are going to love this or hate it, you have experience share, and it's always on. You can, I believe you can maybe turn it off, but it's not something I ever did. What this means is that a lot of the grinding time in Pokemon is basically removed from the equation. You no longer really have to grind anymore. I think that's great. You know, here's me complaining about the main story and how short it is, and then also saying that I don't like grinding and I want it gone. How do I reconcile those two? I mean, I'm allowed to. Yeah. No, I think the fact that you can pick up a new Pokemon, put them on your team, and have them usable and viable within half an hour, that's great, especially in a game with so many Pokemon.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that choice in the game design. You know, if you're doing some hatching, you know, you get the Charmander late in the game, all kinds of these Pokemon that you just pick up, and you're like, you're kind of at a crappy level. But you could just pop them in spot 5, 4, or 6, and let them soak up all that experience points. And I think that's great. It definitely means less grinding and more time exploring and more time catching. Again, yeah. 600. Here's the thing with when people are like, why isn't this Pokemon in this game? There's so many Pokemon in this game. I started on a complete Pokedex, and I gave up. I was like, forget it. Mm-hmm. I don't have
one
to
of,
catch them.
One of my favorite Pokemon in Black and White was Larvesta, which is a little fiery moth bug Pokemon, a little fiery caterpillar. Larvesta becomes Volcarona, which is this big fire bug. It's a bug-type Pokemon that's actually very powerful, which wasn't a thing before Black and White, really. The issue with Larvesta is that it doesn't evolve until, like, level 5 billion, whereas everybody else evolves, like, level 30. So you were stuck with Larvesta in its larval form for a massive chunk of the game, unless you grinded, and you probably had to grind anyway. That doesn't happen in this game. If I see a new Pokemon that I think is cool and I want to use them, even if they evolve at level 5 billion, I can confidently put them in my team and say, you know what, you will sponge this XP, and I will have you in a usable state before the end of the game. I don't have to waste hours of my life grinding. Nintendo respects my time.
That's great. And besides, it's really easy to get experience candies, rare candies in this game from playing raids. So you could just manually boost people up without even having to battle.
Right, that's absolutely true. You know, if you're doing these raids in the wild area where you and a few other players or maybe even NPCs team up to battle a Gigantamax, the big Pokemon, you'd get experience candies like in Pokemon Go, and you could level up Pokemon that you haven't been using, which, again, in a game with so many Pokemon, you finally have the opportunity to have a dynamic team that can switch when you want it to.
Yes. Now, a question I want to ask you that just popped in my head. You played Pokemon Let's Go.
I did play Pokemon Let's Go. I didn't actually finish it because, honestly, after going through Red and Blue and then Fire Red and Leaf Green, I didn't know that I really needed to go back to Generation 1 again, especially when, like, 12-year-old me played Red and Blue, like, 5-6 times.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I hadn't played it since that time, so it was a nice refresher. But what did you think about... Were there some things in Let's Go that weren't in Sword and Shield that you think would improve Sword and Shield if they'd been included?
I liked having a Pokemon follow me. I thought that was really cool that I had a Pokemon... Yeah, a buddy Pokemon. Like, again, there's that symbiotic aspect of it again. Like, Pokemon and humans are partners. They're friends. They're not tools. They're your friends. So that was lacking in Sword and Shield, and I wouldn't be surprised if they ever do make a second Sword and Shield game with Pokemon Gun or whatever.
Pokemon Gun and Lancer, so yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, there you go. I wouldn't be surprised to see that coming back. I think it's a really great idea, and I think it's probably not especially expensive in terms of dev time to do it because the models are already there.
Yeah. So not motion controls?
Yeah, honestly, I had the Pokeball Plus thing for Let's Go, and I thought that was cool too.
that's cool.
Yeah, it was a good time. I saw it for the first time at E3, and they had to, like, restrain me from, like, I choose you, Gengar.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool controller. I didn't pick one of those up. I thought it was a little pricey, but it's cool that was an option. But the reason why that question popped in my head is because we were talking about, you know, cut and surf and stuff like that. The way that they solved that in Let's Go was you just apply those things to your buddy Pokemon. It's kind of weird to think of Pikachu surfing and flying and all these things, but you know, he gets around. It's cool.
I mean, he's surfed and flew since Pokemon Yellow. There's precedent for it.
Really? See, I didn't play Yellow.
There you go.
Oh well, learn something new every day.
Yep.
Okay, this is from Invictus75, who said, "I like the capability of accessing your Pokemon boxes PC from practically anywhere, not just having to be at a Pokemon Center." And this kind of echoes what you were saying earlier. The leveling process, in my opinion, seemed to flow very smoothly, leaving very little prep time, if any, going from gym to gym. I think that's true.
So, you know, I'm going to agree with Invictus in that I really like the idea that you could access your Pokemon boxes and PC from anywhere. But I'm also going to give that a caveat, which is that because I've played every Pokemon game around the time that it came out, I would constantly and consistently forget that I could do it. Like, it's real cool that you can do it. I just never remember. I would get in. I would want to mess with my team and run back to the Pokemon Center. And, oh, wait, that's not actually necessary anymore. You have an item that lets you do it anywhere. That's great.
You had to hoof it out of the wild area. That's a shame.
Yeah, exactly. And I can see why it's there, probably because of the wild area.
Yeah.
And, yeah, again, the leveling process. I would argue that if you use candies and stuff, and if you take like an hour-long detour to the wild every once in a while, you don't really ever have to grind. It's just not necessary in this game.
Yeah. No, I don't think... Even blitzing, it can be done all the way through the game. You don't have to grind for nothing. Well, let's talk about some of the Pokemon themselves. Some of the new Pokemon in the game. We talked about the starters here for a bit. I absolutely need to say this. I thought that Corviknight is the coolest new Pokemon in existence. I was like, this is like a Dark Knight Raven. This is the coolest thing in the world. So I kept Corviknight in my team for a really long time.
So I'm sure you were happy that Corviknight shows up a lot in the plot, too. Like, he's your taxi. Yes. You can actually see Corviknights flying around in towns and stuff.
Yeah, every time I saw him, I was just like, that's such a great idea. That's such a cool Pokemon.
So for me, there's this Pokemon. It's a cup of tea, Poltegeist. And the first time I saw it, I was like, I have to use the tea. And I did. And the tea is, you know, also, along from being a great idea, you know, this spooky ghost tea that wants you to drink it, the tea is also, like, incredibly powerful and kind of broken, actually. So I'd go through and, like, destroy the champion's team with a cup of tea, a cup of spooky tea. I thought that was great. As far as other, like, new Pokemon and forms that I liked, let me see. Toxel and its evolution Toxtricity, you know. I just love the idea. So we're going to talk about favorite types at some point. I'm looking at the... I'm cheating and, like, reading ahead in the episode plan now.
Oh, no.
We will eventually talk about favorite Pokemon types, and I'll tell you in advance, my favorite is Poison. I love Poison types. I think they're real great. Toxel, being a new Poison type, who is a great from a conceptual level, like a punk rock electric lizard Pokemon poison attacks. That was real cool. If you heard that was my cat destroying stuff. So sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right. Cats are always guests on this show. I like that a lot of the new Pokemon obviously do take some of their inspirations from what you would think to be stereotypical British culture. Like, so you've got the tea. I like that you've got a lot of little, like, dainty pastries and things like that, fruits. But there seem to be a lot of new ghost types, a lot of new psychic and fairy types. Another one that I liked here was the Dragapult one. It's just like, this is a dragon ghost, and he shoots smaller versions of himself from his head.
You know, I've heard a lot of people saying they like him. It's funny, though, I never actually caught him until the postgame. Like, I didn't see him until the postgame. I did see that Raihan has him, but he never made it onto my team with us. Didn't have him. And that's, you know, again, we complain that there's not enough Pokemon. That's clearly not the case.
Yeah, there's too much Pokemon. You could play the entire game without seeing a certain ones of these.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, he was Dragapult's only on, like, the Isle of Rage or something like that in one area in the wild. And he only appears at certain weather patterns and things like that. So you literally could play the whole game, never see him. Sirfetch'd is wonderful. I've been waiting for a Farfetch'd evolution for my entire adult life, really, so far. And Sirfetch'd is just a beauty with his lance and his shield. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, honestly, I would say that out of all the new Pokemon, outside of, like, the starters, I've seen the most good press by Sirfetch'd. Everybody loves Sirfetch'd. I think everybody loved that sheep before Hopsword has shown up and using it first every time and just getting it killed.
Yeah.
But everybody still likes Sirfetch'd.
Yeah, most definitely. What'd you think of the legendaries in this game?
I liked them. My favorite, you know, given that I like poison Pokemon, was the secret third legendary, Eternatus, the big Dynamax dragon skeleton Pokemon, yeah. Poison Dragon. I thought he was great. I thought he was real cool. I had Zamazenta because I was playing Shield. And everybody's like, oh, you know, a Shield, it's just a wolf with a shield. That's lame. I'm like, that is not lame. You are lame.
I think you and I had that argument. I just went with the one that looks like Okami because Okami is a great game and I love it. But
makes sense.
Yeah, it's a wolf. I mean, they're both awesome. It's a wolf with a sword in his mouth versus, like, a wolf whose entire front body is a shield.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, out of the two, which one would win? Probably Zamazenta because I leveled it slightly higher. That's all it takes, really.
Okay. let's see here. So that kind of covers Lodestar Valor's question. What are your favorite new Pokemon or forms? What Pokemon do you wish made the cut? I think I know yours, Red, but still want to hear. So here's where we start to get into the Pokédex question, the fan outrage, mm-hmm. the Dexit.
Oh, boy.
Can you believe that we live in a universe where we saw the word Dexit? That's nuts.
You know, it's not a universe I'm happy with, but I do understand why it happened. If I had to pick Pokemon that I wish were in the game that weren't, I would probably say I was disappointed at the lack of the starters for the most part. You know, it's been kind of a trend to have the starters from every generation be available in some form. You know, maybe You have to wait till the second game, which we'll talk about later, but they were always there. Mm-hmm. In this one, you've got Charmander, you've got your starters from the new game, and that's about it.
So back on Red and Blue, the original, who was your starter?
Yep. Bulbasaur. Bulbasaur.
Mine was Bulbasaur too.
Everybody who makes the correct decisions in their lives picked Bulbasaur.
That's ridiculous. And now you have to take back everything you ever said about me.
No. You're still terrible, but...
Bulbasaur is such an unpopular pick. Like, dude, there's memes about Bulbasaur being left out. That's ridiculous.
You know, I find it hard to believe. I always thought Bulbasaur and my little group of friends back in elementary school, middle school, back in the day, everybody liked Bulbasaur. I thought it was real cool.
Really? Well, it must have been like the one school on the planet. My school, everybody loved Charizard. Everything was all about Charizard. Who cares about
it? And meanwhile, I'm over here having never finished a playthrough of Charizard.
Wow. Well, there you go. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, I think that we could both agree seeing the starters would have been cool.
Yeah.
That's about maybe, what is Mewtwo not in this game?
You know, honestly, there are so many that when I heard the question, it's hard for me to think of many that I would have really liked to have in because there are so many already. And that was a serious concern before the game came out. Like, oh no, they've cut so many Pokemon. It's so terrible. Okay, I'm going to be real with you for a minute. Does anybody really care that Venonat and Venomoth are gone? No. Nobody's favorite Pokemon is Venomoth.
Yeah, where the one guy who's like the Venomoth fan is like, okay, I just looked up
how many Pokemon
are there in total.
I think there's like 1,100, 1,200.
See, now that sounds right to me. There's this article here. This is the first one that pops up on Google that says 807, but I think it's more than that. That doesn't sound high enough.
You know, I'd honestly have to look it up. Yeah, because there's a lot. There are a whole lot. You can play any given generation of Pokemon with only the Pokemon introduced in that generation and still have a full and complete experience. They intentionally try to give you a mix of typings. The only time I can recall when a lack of typings was in one of the generations of these games was in the initial Diamond and Pearl when fire was kind of rare.
Hmm.
But otherwise, I mean, just, you know, you can find new favorites. It's that easy.
Yeah, that's true. So you didn't see eye to eye with the Dexit crowd, with the boycotts. You didn't advocate for that one guy who evidently, I saw pictures of this, evidently put up notices in like his local Walmarts and Targets saying to customers to not buy Pokemon Sword and Shield because it was harmful to the industry.
I think nothing matters less to me than the health of the industry, first off. Second off, no, I'm not really on board with that crowd. You know, I will admit that when I first started playing, I was like, I'm going to see a lot of these same Pokemon because there aren't going to be that many. That's not remotely true. And I only thought that was the case because of the aforementioned Dexit crowd who kept saying, oh no, there's so few Pokemon. The Pokedex is so small. They're so... it's going to be terrible. That's not even close to true.
I played this game for quite a while and still didn't catch everything.
Yeah, you can still... You could go out to the... If you boot up the game right now, you could probably go out to the wild area and find something you hadn't caught yet. It's that... Yeah, it's just like that.
Yeah, it's that big. Well, not to mention, you've got filling out your Pokedex. I know one person who has finished the Pokedex. Have you finished the Pokedex? I forgot if I asked you already.
Definitely not.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, literally with like 25,000 Steam games, sure. I haven't finished the Pokedex. I know one guy has, shout out to Nerdhouse on Twitter, who has finished not just the Pokedex, but apparently is working on a shiny Dex. I mean, that's dedication. Did you catch any shinies at all?
The only shiny I have ever seen and caught was not in this game. It was a shiny Sigalith in, I think, X and Y.
See, I will shiny hunt in Pokemon Go all day, but
shiny
hunting in here, I didn't see one shiny.
Not a single one. And it's funny because, you know, whenever I'm playing these games now, I know to, like, kind of go out of my way and maybe get into a few more random battles than I would have otherwise, just in case, because you never know. It just didn't happen.
Did they have like a chain thing in place where you catch the same type over and over again and it raises your opportunity?
So that is in place in this game. I never took advantage of it, but it is a thing that exists.
Oh, so you could shiny hunt if you wanted to. What about the competitive scene? Did you do any PvP action?
You know, I only really ever paid attention to competitive Pokemon back when Emerald was a thing, because that's what I knew the most. And even then, I wasn't a huge fan of it. Personally, and I'm not saying you can't play and enjoy this, personally, I think the idea of playing Pokemon solely to win kind of defeats the purpose. Pokemon are partners. They're not tools. They're not weapons. If your favorite is Farfetch'd, you know, I have a friend, she loves Farfetch'd and would use it on all of her teams every single game, regardless of it being like one of the worst Pokemon you could use, because she liked it. Competitive kind of just destroys that idea. And again, not saying you can't do it, not saying you shouldn't like it. I'm just saying I'm not the biggest fan of it. I don't really do it.
Yeah. I think I'm one who plays these games to just try and catch as many of them as I can. I definitely didn't want to get into the competitive scene here. You're starting to look at, you know, getting perfect IVs and all these things and hatching. And I tried breeding Pokemon for like a day and was like, I don't want to do this anymore. Just too much running around hatching eggs. Forget it. But you know what is really cool? And this is something that took me by surprise, because prior to the launch of Pokemon Sword and Shield, I really thought that this was going to turn out to be just like a gimmick that didn't mean anything in this game, wasn't going to be a significant part of it, wasn't going to be remembered by myself personally. But that's Gigantamax and Dynamax. What did you think of those two implementations?
They reminded me a lot of the Mega Evolution from X and Y, which honestly, again, I hate to be that guy, it made Pokemon look like Digimon. And those are two very different aesthetics. Let's be real here.
Okay, hang on. Before you go further, I like that you said that. Okay, because I've been accused of being a Gen 1 purist, and I kind of am. But I think that over time, we've seen Pokemon designs go more in the Digimon route. And I say that sometimes, and there's people who are like, what the heck are you talking about? But the fact that you just said it on my show makes me really happy. So
they're very different aesthetics. Digimon have kind of a more humanoid form. They're more edgy.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, there's plenty of edgy Pokemon. Like, but when they do that, and when they go as far as edgy as they want, it's usually a legendary, or in Sun and Moon, you got your Ultra Beasts, which are explicitly designed to look different from other Pokemon. And that's fine. so when it comes to Dynamaxing and Gigantamaxing, I liked it a lot more. Because this is the thing you can do with any Pokemon. It's not just a matter of I have to use this Pokemon that the community liked a lot because it has a Mega Evolution and I don't want to not have that. Anybody can do it. So if I want my, my Cast Form, which is this terrible little cloud Pokemon, they come super big and scary, poof, he can do it. It's great. Let's go. I will say that out of all the new gimmicks introduced in the last few generations, I probably think that Z-moves from Sun and Moon were the best because they can apply to any Pokemon much like this, but they also don't result in these kind of weird-looking, different new Pokemon forms, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, if you look back to Mega Evolution from X and Y, there have been explicit efforts from Nintendo to kind of distance themselves from it. You know, it's meant to be an evil thing. It's not a good thing to do. Pokemon don't like it. It's painful.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. I didn't know any of that. But I do like that you get kind of a little variation on forms here with Gigantamax. I must have laughed for half a day when I saw Longcat Meowth in his Gigantamax form. I think that's brilliant. But the fact that they're introducing new Gigantamax forms, we just saw Snorlax and, you know, they're adding a bunch more. I think that's pretty cool. It kind of breathes new life into, like, Snorlax. Snorlax has been around for, like, forever. And every time I play a Pokemon game, I'm just like, I guess I'm going to have Snorlax on my party. But now I can have a freaking mountain-sized Snorlax with, like, a tree growing out of his navel, and that's awesome.
Yep. That's real cool, yeah. And the thing that differentiates it, I think, is the fact that some Pokemon do have these different Gigantamax forms, but everybody can Dynamax. Nobody is restricted from doing this Dynamax thing. It's great, and that's why the competitive Pokemon community banned it.
So let's talk about the Direct for a little bit here. We got an eye on the expansions that are coming, mm-hmm. Isle of Armor and Crown Tundra. What do you think of this big reveal?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's so Nintendo has this habit. Let's step back a little bit. Nintendo has this habit of being a few years behind whatever the trend might be. We didn't get online Nintendo gaming until the Wii. We didn't get a subscription model until the Switch. So Nintendo's usually a step behind, but now here we are with them adding DLC to one of their big, heavy-hitting franchise games. And if you ask me, I think it's wonderful. They're adding more Pokemon, they're adding more areas, and perhaps most importantly, I don't have to start my game over to play them. I can keep the Pokemon that I've been using, and there's no more badge collecting. I can just keep using them, and there's new stuff to find, and that's wonderful.
So this is definitely your preference, then. Here was a question from Just Callus. What's your thoughts on the DLC plan that will essentially replace the third version format that has been in place for decades? So you brought up a great point. If they release a third version and you pick it up, you essentially are starting your game all over again.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. I can't really say that I have a distinct preference for either format. I like that I can explore these new areas with the same Pokemon that I've had, but I also never really hated playing a new Pokemon game. I didn't mind starting with a new starter in Black and White 2 or Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. That just gave me a chance to experience the game from a new perspective. Mm-hmm. So if they were to say, you know, make Pokemon Lance, Pokemon Gun, Pokemon Boomerang, whatever, I'd play that too. That's completely fine with me.
I wish they would just do those versions just for those goofy titles. That would be amazing.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So do I prefer it? I don't know that I'd say I prefer either concept. I think that I'm fine with the DLC concept, and I want to see how it works out.
Mm. And they're adding 200 new Pokemon to the game through these expansions, too. So that kind of deflates the whole, where's Bulbasaur, where's Squirtle, and the crying and the boycotting. And here we are just a couple of months later. I mean, what did this come out in November?
Yeah.
Yeah, like 2 months later. And we're already getting a lot of those.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because if you look back to some data mining projects done on these games, we knew that Squirtle and Bulbasaur were going to be in this game because the data's there. The fact that they're adding a whole 200 more, though, that's kind of unprecedented. And it speaks to, you know, the modern era of gaming. You know, people complain about things like, oh, there's too much DLC. Oh, you have to install your games. Oh, updating takes forever. But then you can also add 200 Pokemon to this Pokemon game. You can just do it. You don't have to buy a new game. It's just there. Boom. There you go.
And among those, Galarian versions of the three original legendaries, Zapdos, yep, Articunos, and Moltres, I was blown away. Like, that, to me, I felt like a 7-year-old all over again.
I mean, does it really make them so legendary anymore if there's multiple of them? Who knows?
That's true. And it seems like we've gotten more legendaries as the games go on. But let's say these are just like, you know, variations of the original legendaries. But where do you see kind of Sword and Shield going in the future? Do you think we'll get more expansions, or do you think, you know, they might drop Pokemon Gun and Lance on us?
I think these games sold well enough that maybe they that doesn't make any sense. I think these games sold well enough that we would be likely to see a third game in this particular part, this particular generation at some point. Am I going to stake money on it? Probably not. Nintendo isn't really known for doing things you expect them to do. Mm. But if I were the head of Nintendo, yes, I would be working on Pokemon Shotgun right now.
Pokemon Shotgun. Yes, please. Oh, there you go. You got Pokemon Pistol, Pokemon Shotgun, and there's your two new games.
There you go.
So a couple of final audience questions here. By the way, if you're listening, you can ask questions on Twitter. Visit at the Well-Read Mage, and you can ask questions about new shows before we record them. I'm sorry, those of you who ask questions after we record, there's not much I can do about that. But here's a question from Duct Tape Plays, part of a question he asked earlier. But he said, what's your favorite type and why? Now, you said poison, which I was a little surprised by. I don't know if I know anybody whose favorite type is poison. Why is that the case?
So I've always thought that poison types have kind of gotten the short end of the stick. I think they've always been kind of the bad guy type. They've always had a lot of weaknesses. And I just think it's cool to use Pokemon like that. Pokemon who maybe don't have the biggest chance of winning. Pokemon that maybe other people don't use. And I appreciated when Fairy type came out and they had another weakness to fight against. That's real cool. So Pokemon like in the last generation, you had Salandit and Salazzle. I had Salazzle on my team the entire game. Prior to that, I was a big fan of that garbage Pokemon. Everybody hated him. I thought he was great. This game, you know, you have Eternatus, Poison Dragon type. Yeah, sign me up. Let's go. I don't know. I just appreciated that a lot. I think it's cool that we finally reached a state where there is no clear better or worse typing unless you're playing competitive. And even then, you know, there's still some questions. So, yeah, Poison.
I think as they've kind of expanded the amount of types too over the years, that single type dominance doesn't seem as clear anymore, definitely.
Right. Contrast this back with Red and Blue when you had a psychic period straight
up. Yeah, you just dominated. So yeah. My favorite type, kind of hard to say. I do like grass because, again, Bulbasaur guy, since back in the day. But Red and Blue, I think you only had one pure grass type in Tangela, right, if I remember right?
Right, you had a single pure grass type and it was Tangela. Yeah.
So you didn't have too many like pure grass options back in the day. These days, much more grass options. But grass types, I mean, are they usually always the first gym?
It varies from game to game. I think we've seen them be the first gym more often than not.
Yeah. They're kind of like a weenie choice, I guess. So I'm not going to say that because it's all about narrative, right? So I'm going to say my favorite Pokemon type is Ghost. Now, Ghost is kind of like the Glass Hammer type, though. Mm-hmm. They can get demolished. In this game, I was using Aegislash. Quite a bit, but again, he could get bulldozed over really quickly if you leave him out for too long. But he could hit pretty
hard. And Aegislash is a very thematic choice for this game.
Yeah, absolutely. I tried to keep that in mind. That fits in a question here. This is from Overthinkery One, who said, "Well, we'll take the second part of his statement here. The obvious question is what your team ended up being at the end of the game. Who was on your team?"
So at the end of the game, the two that I can definitely remember, I used Poltegeist quite a bit because he was so powerful and I liked the idea. I used Inteleon quite a bit because he's an intelligence agent and that's real cool. And honestly, the rest of my four were just kind of a constantly rotating bunch of people who swapped in and out. I know Sirfetch was present. Honestly, I can't recall the last three.
Probably Eternatus, huh? You used quite a bit.
Yeah, he was definitely there, but I don't know that I like using legendary Pokemon against, you know, regular trainers because it doesn't really seem fair. I have this actual deity here against your cute little puppy.
I did think of that because, again, I went back through and kind of tidied up with trainers and treasures. And that does seem pretty unfair. You're fighting like a kid, and he's just like, "Hey, here's my sheep," and you throw out like this monster.
Yeah, this horrible giant Skella dragon with poison powers. Like, no, you stay in the Pokeball. I'm just gonna use this duck with a sword. It's fine.
Pretty unfair. Well, for me, I used Charizard, Snorlax, Lapras. Kept Lapras for a pretty decent amount of the game. And used some of the TMs to give my Lapras a range of abilities to cover all kinds of weaknesses. And I had to use Galarian Weezing. I think that Galarian Weezing is one of the finest additions to this game.
Oh, it's a great design, absolutely. Yeah,
super cool. I had a smile on my face every time I used him. Aegislash or Eternatus, either one. Sirfetch'd, and then if I had an extra spot, usually it was just an egg. Not very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but because I picked Sobble, I definitely restarted until I got a female one, and then I like definitely peddled my Sobble eggs at the breeder for a while to get some good stuff.
Well, there you go, yeah. I didn't even think of that. I restarted a couple times because I couldn't decide on a starter, but ended up with Grookey anyway. Here's a technical question that I was like, I don't know. Let me ask the expert. This is from Playjack Sayback. If you have both games and want the DLC, do you have to buy the DLC twice or will it work for both games? I feel like there's a really obvious answer, but I don't know.
You have to buy the DLC twice because the game industry is screwing us again. Yep. Womp, womp.
Well, just buy one. There you go.
I mean, I think the point of the DLC, the DLC idea is to keep you playing one game. Like, you don't have to play both versions. Maybe you want to, and that's cool, and, you know, that's completely, that's acceptable. Uh-huh. But between Wonder Trade, or rather, online trading, and the DLC, like, you don't really have to play them both. You can just pick one.
Right.
I could see from a collector's standpoint why somebody would want to own two.
Oh, yeah. No, I've always bought them both. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that that's invalid at all. Right. But I'm also saying that it's not the end of the world that you would have to buy them twice.
And you're saying from a gameplay perspective, though. You know, so that's like the collector's perspective, and that's totally valid. But from a gameplay perspective, these are pretty similar, you know? And trading is easy in this. I mean, you could do blind trades. You could do whatever. And you can get quite a lot.
I had no trouble getting the sword exclusive Pokemon. It was not even a tiny issue.
No, and I thought that it was going to be hard to get a hold of the starters. I'm like, oh my gosh, the starter is going to be so hard. And I start training and get like all three starters in like half an hour. I was like, oh, never mind.
That sounds
because there's people that are camping on like hundreds and hundreds of Sobbles. I'm ashamed to say it, but I did go on Reddit to kind of look around and see who was trading what. And there's people with like they're like, I have thousands of Grookies, please.
Thousands of Grookies.
Like, just give me something for one of these Grookies. Like, I think you're overbreeding. Question here from Crits McCrits. I think I sometimes overlook the fact that Pokemon is a JRPG. How do you think it compares to other JRPGs, other popular JRPGs, excuse me, like Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, Persona, etc.?
You know, I'm going to come out and say, I'm going to be the weird guy who says that even though I just used the term myself a little bit ago, I don't know how fond I am of the term JRPG. I think that when we talk about Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, and Persona, those are all three very different games. I mean, the only thing that really makes them similar might be their battle system. Mm-hmm. And even these days, that's fairly different. So if you look at Pokemon, that's another different battle system entirely. Though if we are going to compare them to all of that same style of game, I will say that Pokemon, generally speaking, even though there's definitely been efforts to capitalize on the nostalgia people feel for it, Pokemon is still very much a game for kids. Mm-hmm. I think maybe this so more than any other, because I see we have another question from Captain Friggin later about how newcomer-friendly are these. Sword and Shield, I think, out of any of the Pokemon games, is probably the most newcomer-friendly. It's easy to level. The battles are not too difficult. You're just not going to have any trouble. It's a great starter game, people who are new to RPGs.
Yeah. So if my four-year-old can play it and have fun and catch Pokemon, I mean, I got to make sure he's not throwing, like, Ultra Balls at, like, you know, a Caterpie. But other than that, he can have fun with it.
But there's nothing wrong with that, because I'm sure you played it yourself and you also had fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not even, like, the condescending type of fun, like, wow, I'm playing with my kid, this is great, but actually legitimately enjoying yourself. And that's, I think, kind of the magic of not just this game, but Nintendo games as a whole. They nail that. Mm. Like, anybody can pick up a Nintendo game, and with a little bit of time and practice, they can get into it. And that's wonderful. That's what will make video games a more accepted and, you know, relevant thing in the future. Like, Pokemon Go, back in the day, back in 2016, was... 2016?
No, that sounds about right. 2016, yeah.
Was there? Yeah, it might have been right. Anyway, point being that Pokemon Go was one of the first times that, you know, you'd go outside, you'd see people from all walks of life, ages, genders, races, social status, playing a video game and not feeling ashamed or, you know, thinking it's a weird thing. That's what Pokemon does. It's okay for everybody to like Pokemon. That's fantastic.
It's probably part of why this is a worldwide cultural phenomenon.
It's probably part of why Sword and Shield sold so well, because everybody likes Pokemon. You know, and that's a hyperbole, of course, but you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll still go out and play Pokemon Go. Usually take my kids, so it's a little, you know, like, oh, he's got his kid with him, it's okay. But I mean, I enjoy meeting new people just on the street and talking with them. And last time I went out, I was talking to like a Vietnam War veteran. The guy's out there with two cell phones. He's like, dude, I just caught this shiny, like, whatever it was, pillow swine or something like that. I was like, that's awesome. That's amazing to see, like, here's this guy is, like, he's up there. You know, he's had these massively different life experiences than I have. And then, like, over here you've got, like, this little, like, teeny bopper girl that's playing the game. Over here you've got, like, the indie artist that came down from his loft to play. Over here you've got, like, the shop owner. All these different kinds of people from all around the world, all these different backgrounds, enjoying these games.
And, you know, you and I have clashed about this before as far as, you know, any existence of a stigma against video games comes from. Yeah, we've talked about this before in the chat, but let's be entirely honest here. Have you ever seen that happen before? Like, where everybody is playing the same video game?
The, you know what? And this is something that I included when I wrote on, I think it was Let's Go. The last time I saw that kind of cultural impact, like cultural impact, like economic impact, there are shops that change their hours and their menus for Pokemon Go. Like, there are shops that were giving Pokemon trainers discounts if they could come in and show that they were playing Pokemon Go on their phone. That's insane to me. That's crazy. That's amazing. But the last time I saw anything like that was in the schoolyard, when literally the entire school was playing Pokemon on the Game Boy.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely insane. Like, again, people going out, playing a video game, and while, you know, you had the odd media outlet being like, ha-ha, video games, crazy, huh? I mean, that wasn't the most common thing. It was just the thing that people did, and that's where the hobby needs to be.
And I think that the fact that it's on mobile makes it that much more accessible. Like, everybody is walking around with this computer in their pocket. And so Everybody could just pull it out and start playing. So every time you're going for a walk, every time you're going shopping, every time I go to the beach or go out of town, I'm like, I'm taking my Pokemon Go with me just to see if there's any different types down there.
Yeah, and you never know. Also, to conclude Captain Friggin's questions, that's probably the only part of it. There is not couch co-op in Pokemon Sword and Shield. Yeah,
that was something that they tried, I think, with Let's Go. It was kind of something that I think the game stumbled with. I think that Pokemon as a single-player game is where it needs to be.
Yeah, no, I feel pretty good about that, especially now that there is this online feature to it, so that you're not entirely disconnected at any point. Yeah, no, I think it's where it needs to be.
Favorite Pokemon game of all time? You said Emerald, right?
Emerald, yeah. You know, as much as I've liked the ones that have come out since then, I think Emerald is still the one that really just really captures what makes Pokemon great. There's so much to do. There's so many Pokemon to catch. It's just so well put together. Like, I don't know that they can really outdo Emerald. It's fantastic.
And that was going to be actually the next question that I would ask you. What could they do with another Pokemon game, or say expanding Pokemon Sword and Shield, to make it more like Emerald, your favorite?
It's funny because the one thing that really captured how I felt about Emerald when I was playing Sword and Shield was the wild area. It's that sensation when you're playing a really good game and your head gets to a point where you feel like there's no end to it. Like, there are no borders. There's no boundaries. Like, the game could maybe go on forever, as far as you know. And we know that's not true. Like, mentally, we know that's not the case. We know that there's always going to be a part where the game ends. There's always going to be a part where you hit an invisible wall, or maybe the credits roll. But when you're in the wild area the first time, it really feels like it's endless. And more experiences like that, I think, are what would make Pokemon even better.
Yeah. Maybe, hopefully, someday in our lifetime, we'll get a Pokemon game that's entirely open. A one big wild area. Like Breath of the Wild.
I think given the response to wild area, that it wouldn't surprise me to see that at some point.
That would be fantastic. Well, final question here. How many Pokeballs, Mr. Thou?
See, I looked at this question. I wasn't really entirely sure what Mr. Thou meant. Like, how many Pokeballs did I use? Probably a bunch. How many Pokeballs, like, different types of Pokeball are available? All the ones from previous games. I don't think there are any new ones. I'm not super clear.
Yeah, that's a better answer than I could give. So, thanks for being on the show with me, sir. Where can our listeners find you?
So you can find me in two places. First one, obviously, is the Well-Read Mage, where I will periodically write reviews of whatever games interest me based on the code offering part of the Discord. you can also find me on Popzara Press, popzara.com. I do some writing for them here and there, and by here and there, I mean about once a week I write four or so reviews. Every so often, you can find me on the Computer America Show, which is available on Twitch, but it's been a little while since I was on there, so don't worry too much about that one. Just focus on popzara.com. It's your popular bazaar full of content and something. We don't really have a slogan.
Well, you know what? I will be honest that the first time I saw Popzara, first thing I thought about was just the nomenclature for the spells in Final Fantasy.
Yeah. It's like, one day we'll evolve to Popzaga, so it'll be fine.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. Well, thanks for being on. I appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you very much, Red.
So you've finished another episode of MageCast.
What do you want, an award? No, actually, what would be even better is if you kept the conversation going with us. Let me know what your favorite Pokemon is and your favorite type. You can shoot me an email at thewellreadmage@gmail.com or drop us some comments on our website, thewellreadmage.com. You can visit our Facebook page or Twitter to tell us even. Listeners help bolster the conversation, and that'll never change so long as there's breath in my lungs and more games to talk about on MageCast. While this episode may be over, the legend will live on, passed down by the dwarves, the elves, and those dragons.